It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I spoke with Rudy Giuliani on the telephone in the last hour, and he confirmed to Fox News that about 2 weeks ago, the special counsel Robert Mueller assured the president's outside legal team that he would follow DOJ guidelines that a sitting president cannot be indicted. Giuliani says that Mueller doesn't really have any choice. He has to follow the findings of a 1999 Clinton-era DOJ memo. Now, that's not to say that Mueller still couldn't find some evidence of wrongdoing that Congress could act on, but the president's legal team doesn't appear concerned. Giuliani telling Fox News a short time ago, quote, this case is essentially over. They're just in denial.
You know, it's really funny that there's a public statement by Bob Mueller, the special counsel, that he will, you know, he'll follow Department of Justice guidelines. Okay, he'll do, because, you know, he is hired by the Department of Justice. He comes under the wing and the watch, supposedly, of Rod Rosenstein, the second in command at Justice. But so it's really big news that he's decided he would actually follow regulations and not indict the president. That on its face is a little silly. But it's still news to many of us because we thought that's where this was leading, didn't we? Rudy Giuliani, who John just referred to, who he said he just spoke to, had a lot to say himself in various appearances last night. Let's listen to one of them.
The same reason they can't indict him, they can't issue a subpoena to him. And remember, Clinton opposed a subpoena, and then he voluntarily complied. He didn't give up presidential prerogative, and then his administration wrote a memo saying they can't do that. I think that they have the facts from which they can write their report. If you're going to write a fair report, fine, write it. If you're going to write an unfair report, write it, and we will combat it. We're ready to rip it apart.
All right, so that's Rudy Giuliani, who's leading the president's defense team. And, you know, it has been a year. It's been a year. There's a lot happening. A ton of stories, a ton of information came out yesterday. The New York Times printed a really incredible article, and I am going to talk about that. So just stay tuned. I will talk about that shortly. Also, in the last segment today, we have Patrice Bright. She is the mother of Anna Bright, the 14-year-old girl who committed suicide after watching Netflix series 13 Reasons. And so I hope that you'll stay tuned. That's going to be kind of a tough time. It's going to be tough for Patrice, and my challenge will be, of course, to be, it's just tough to do an interview like that. And so stay with us because you'll want to hear her story and our interaction. But back to the news. All right, so I'm gonna come back to the breaking news on this investigation thing in a second, but there's other things I want to tell you. Peter Ducey talked about Gina Haspel yesterday. She's the nominee for CIA director, and remember, I've told you repeatedly and over again that I think this is a huge mistake, worse than a mistake. I've told you that John Brennan has been her cheerleader, and that's a major red flag since John Brennan is the deep state leader. He is of the undermining Trump and impeaching and getting rid of him. This is the leader of the band has been a John Brennan. All right. All that to say, here's Peter's report. Then I have some updated news on Gina Haspel. Let's listen.
This morning, Obama-era intel officials briefed a bipartisan group of senators about how they came to the conclusion that Russians meddled to help Trump in an intelligence community assessment, or ICA, which reportedly relied on the infamous unverified dirty dossier. And in a break with House Republicans, Republican Chairman Richard Burr now says, quote, we see no reason to dispute the conclusions. Today's talk with the Obama-era spy chiefs, according to one Democrat in attendance, focused less on Trump campaign collusion and more on Russians using Facebook and Twitter to interfere.
We never had social media to this extent in any other election before.
Former CIA Director John Brennan and former National Security Advisor James Clapper were not chatty, leaving their closed-door meeting.
What can you tell us about what you told the committee today, sir?
So the last generation of spy chiefs was characteristically tight-lipped. As the next generation got a step closer to the director's office at Langley, Gina Haspel was easily confirmed today by the Intel Committee. Next stop, a full Senate confirmation vote. It could be as early as tomorrow.
All right, so that was Peter Doocy, and tomorrow, of course, is today, Gina Haspel. And I've been warning you about her. Now, this is what these are a couple of things. Only Rand Paul has asked her the difficult questions. God bless Rand Paul. Because all the senators have been talking about is enhanced interrogation, which was the issue under the George W. Bush presidency and during the war when we invaded Iraq and the aftermath of that. So that was huge news, and everyone was talking about torture, which I would argue with that term, but that's what they call it. Now, Rand Paul himself is against enhanced interrogation, and that's why he initially opposed Gina Haspel's nomination. But he has other reasons, and he just wrote her a letter saying, "I write to ask you for clarification on some of the practices of the Central Intelligence Agency, particularly in relation to surveillance during the 2016 presidential election. Under what circumstances does the CIA trail, monitor, or otherwise collect information on the communications and movements of U.S. presidential candidates, both domestically and while they are traveling outside of the United States?" So he's asking her that question because he's also asking her whether she or anyone else at the CIA was aware of any U.S. government agency or non-governmental agency being involved in the collection of or monitoring of communications of any of the major 2016 presidential candidates while they were traveling outside the U.S. Okay, so that's what Rand Paul's going after. But here's the story that just came to my attention this morning. It's actually a tweet, and this is what it says. Crossfire Hurricane, now we know, thanks to the New York Times article I'm going to be talking about in a few minutes, Crossfire Hurricane was the name of the operation to surveil and whatever you want to fill in the blanks, the Trump campaign, from the time he was first nominated. So they orchestrated this very complicated plot to entrap Donald Trump and his campaign operatives. I don't know what else you could call it. And they called it a Crossfire Hurricane. All right, so here is the tweet. Crossfire Hurricane was the code name for Brennan and Comey's operation in London. Peter Steele, that's Christopher Steele, who allegedly wrote the lying dossier, the tabloid dossier. Downer was the ambassador of Australia. Papadopoulos was the 24-year-old supposed person involved with the Trump campaign. Some of these names I don't know. Halper was the, now we believe, the now revealed British slash American who was entrapped Papadopoulos. I explained this yesterday, and if I take my time to do it today, it will take me too long because I want to make this point. And Lisa Page. The meetings were all based in London. So Stroke, Steele, Downer, Papadopoulos, Miss Food is a name I don't recognize. Halper and Page meetings were all based in London. And who was the CIA London station chief in 2016? It was Gina Haspel. And the tweet says, "This explains a whole lot about why Brennan has aggressively supported her." So what that means is, you see, so much of this intrigue and nefarious collusion between the intelligence agencies against Donald Trump happened in London. It certainly started in London. And in cooperation with the British operatives, like Christopher Steele, who was a former British intelligence officer. And so Gina Haspel was the station chief. And there's another story. So John Brennan and James Clapper are both supporting Gina Haspel. And, of course, Brennan was, as I said before, and I guess I can't say it too much, was the original co-sponsor, the mastermind behind this counterintelligence operation against candidate Trump. In April 23rd, 2018, an article in The Guardian confirms her, Haspel's, quote, deep connections to British intelligence, end quote, and her being twice appointed as chief of station in London within 10 years, which is highly unusual. The first appointment ended 2011. The second would have begun between 2014 and 2017, which is the window of time the counterintelligence operation began with the London meeting. I'm telling you, it's a mistake to confirm Gina Haspel. But, of course, the Senate is so abjectly remiss in their duties Did anyone watch the hearings for Facebook? And did anybody notice how clueless they are? You know, it's their 24-year-old staffers who are writing their speeches because they are busy, napping and vacationing. And by the way, I'm going to talk about this a lot tomorrow on tomorrow's show, what the Senate is actually doing. You will be appalled, and I think you will be angry. And, you know, in that report by Peter Ducey, he mentions the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is led by Richard Burr, the Republican from North Carolina. My sources tell me that the Senate Intelligence Committee is one of the most corrupt entities in Washington. I don't know if I'm going to get to this, but for instance, I have a whole list of senators who have taken money from Iran and did take it to pass the Iranian deal. That terrible, disgraceful, corrupt bill or agreement, not a treaty, they don't call it a treaty, with Iran. Senators sitting in our, in the chambers in Washington took money. In fact, one of the Iranian diplomats is threatening to out all of them if they don't intercede to change Donald Trump's mind on this Iran deal. I'm just trying to make a point about how corrupt the Senate has become. I have lots of other things to tell you, so I'm going to move on. I'm very concerned about this. Something's happening that's big, and you're not hearing about it. I'm not seeing it on Fox, and that's the main source for a lot of us for all the news. So it's important to understand that there is a move underway in the House to pass an amnesty bill and to enshrine DACA into law. DACA was an illegal move by President Barack Obama. And remember, in the election, like the midterm elections, after he did that, it was Mitch McConnell and all the others that they're gonna get in there and they're gonna turn this thing around. They're gonna stop President Obama, but not so much because now they're trying to put it into law. Okay, I'm talking about the House right now, and so you got Jeff Denham and a couple of other. There are 17 members, Republican members, who are trying to collect a total of 25 signers, so that they can all join the Democrats and get the number of signatures they need to bring the bill onto the floor. And then they're going to proceed with another. This is in the weeds. Let me just say their effort is to legalize DACA, which estimates are that 17 million more people would be legalized in this country because of the chain migration provisions. And so, the leadership in the House is pretending. By the way, Jeff Denham says he has enough signatures already. He just hasn't announced all of them. I guess it's a little dangerous to say you support this in your home district. Oh, but I don't think they're too worried about that. In fact, let me just tell you, leadership, I shared with you an article yesterday in which I itemized how Steve Scalise and Kevin McCarthy had punished Republican conservatives in the House when they wanted to do something other than what leadership wanted them to do, when they disagreed on various issues. They were stripped of committee chairmanships. Mark Meadows was one of them. Their funding was taken away for campaigns. They were really severely punished. Now, this little group, this little cabal of 17, now soon to be 25 Republicans, not so much. Not so much. As Paul Ryan beats his breast, and Kevin McCarthy, by the way, is saying, oh, he's so much against it. They're doing nothing. They're talking. They're doing nothing. Kevin McCarthy's running for speaker. He's lobbying the president. The corruption is unbelievable. And people inside the Capitol tell me that the leadership does not really care if they win the 2018 midterms because all they care about is that they get their leadership position, even if they're in the minority. And so I know that Congressman McCarthy is giving money to campaigns around the country to people that will actually support him for speaker, because that's the important thing, you see. So this is the corruption I'm exposing to you. I recognize that it's depressing, but you need to know about this, and that's why I'm asking you, yay, verily, please vote in these primaries. All right, more about this New York Times article and all the latest on the Russian collusion story. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too, so why not? You can call right now. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
Hi, I'm Will Addison.
And I'm Miki.
From Airing the Addisons on Urban Family Talk.
We'd like to invite you to the Marriage, Family, and Life Conference coming up August 17th and 18th.
The list of speakers is amazing. We have Ryan Baumberger of the Radiance Foundation, Dr. Clarence Shuler of Building Lasting Relationships, Abraham Hamilton III, Pastor Bert Harper and his wife Jan, Stacy Washington, Lonnie Poindexter, Pastor Dexter Sanders, and we'll be there too.
There's a direct attack by the enemy on marriage and family, and babies in the womb are treated like political footballs instead of life. We want to encourage and equip the body of Christ to fight for the restoration of the family. If we can get our families on track, a lot of society's problems could be solved. The Marriage, Family, and Life Conference is from Urban Family Communications, a division of the American Family Association. You can learn more and register at urbanfamilytalk.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
California lawmakers are considering legislation that could have a negative impact on Christian bookstores, schools, and church conferences. Assembly Bill 2943 uses the state's consumer fraud statute to penalize religious freedom and free speech on issues ranging from homosexuality to gender identity. Catholics and Protestants and evangelicals are fighting back, but the bill is all but guaranteed to be signed into law. That's because California State House is controlled by a supermajority of Democrats. The law would make it illegal in California to advertise a conference or provide counseling for someone who wants to stop same-sex attraction. Focus on the Family says Christian schools and churches who hold to a traditional understanding of marriage and sexuality would be open to lawsuits. Friends, this is a stand-up-and-be-counted moment. Freedom lovers across the nation must rise up in opposition to this stunning assault on religious liberty. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Donald Trump Jr. said he kept his dad in the dark in June 2016 when Russians came calling with potential dirt on opponent Hillary Clinton. Congressional investigators asked, did he say, why wasn't I told about this meeting? No, he didn't. Did you find that odd? No, because he wasn't aware of it. The meeting almost didn't happen, according to the music promoter with Russian clients who set it up. Rob Goldstone told Congress, I believed it was a bad idea and that we shouldn't do it. And I gave the reason for that being that I am a music publicist. Politics, I knew nothing about. Once the meeting started, things unfolded like this, according to Ike Kavaladze, a U.S. citizen of Georgian descent who works for a group run by a Russian oligarch. Mr. Trump asked if they got anything on Hillary, and to which Mr. Akhmetshin responded, why don't you do your own research on her? We gave you the idea. But Renat Akhmetshin, a Russian lobbyist, was asked by investigators, was there any discussion of anything that might reasonably be considered collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government? Not to weigh I understand it, no. Trump Jr. told Congress that the meeting was instead primarily focused on Russian adoptions. Today, Trump Jr. said, the public can now see that for over 5 hours, I answered every question asked and was candid and forthright with the committee. Democratic lawmakers, not so sure.
I have no confidence that he has told the whole truth.
So the top Republican on the Judiciary Committee may bring Trump Jr. back to testify again.
Things, I'll take it under advisement.
All right, so that's part of Peter Ducey's report on what was happening. Now, the Senate Foreign Intelligence Committee, as I just told you, has been described as one of the most corrupt entities in D.C. under Richard Burr's leadership. And I can attest to you, they have, their report that they came out with yesterday, according to the public purview of it, is very different than the House Intelligence Committee, report, which of course was roundly criticized. The Senate Intelligence Committee's report is much more favorable to the notion of collusion with the Trump campaign for good reason. So Chuck Schumer came out and had comments to say about the report. And then I thought that Senator Lankford, who was on a special report last night, had some very good things to say. So I want you to hear what Senator Chuck Schumer said and then Senator Lankford's response to that. Let's listen.
Senate Republicans interviewed only 12 witnesses in total. An infamous Kremlin-connected lawyer was allowed to provide only written answers. Our Republican friends decided not to even interview two of the other key participants in that meeting, Jared Kushner, Paul Manafort. To call the Senate Judiciary Committee's Trump-Russia investigation half-hearted is too generous.
Your response.
That is a sad designation of what happened in the Senate Judiciary. He knows full well that's the Senate Judiciary. The Senate Intelligence Committee has also gone through this. I know Democrats are trying to be able to make something of this. This is a rabbit hole for them. They're constantly trying to accuse and say there must be something here that we can stir up, or at least just create an accusation that has the appearance of it. We interviewed everybody that was there. We've gone through all the documents. Everyone's story has been consistent. There was no collusion that was a part of that meeting. That was a deceptive reach out from an individual that they had connected to during one of the pageants. It was a music personality they met with as a personal favor. And when you go through all the interviews, it was obvious there was nothing there. There was no reason to even report it and go through it. And my fear is that Democrats continue to make something out of nothing, that if you look at the facts, including all the testimony today, you'll see there was nothing to that meeting.
That was James Lankford from Oklahoma. He had a really great interview with Brett. If I have a chance, I'll play a couple more clips from that. But I have so much to tell you. You know, I told you yesterday that we think that that FBI informant, whatever you want to call it, was a half British, half American operative who actually contacted George Papadopoulos at the ripe old age of 24, offered him $3,000 to write some sort of an article, and then offered to fly him to London for some purported reason, then met with him, and he was the first person this FBI connected, paid for by the U.S. government. I think he got $400,000 for some mysterious reason. He's the first person to tell George Papadopoulos that that Russia had hacked Hillary Clinton's email. He just happened to drop that into the conversation. Then they happened to set up this meeting with George Papadopoulos and Downer, who was the Australian ambassador, who also happens to be a major Clinton Foundation donor. So here's George at age 24, and he happens to be then suddenly in a bar with the ambassador from Australia. And he gets very drunk, and he brags to the Australian ambassador that he just been told that Russia had hacked part of DNC and Hillary Clinton email. So that was the basis upon which then allegedly the story is spun that the Australians let them know that there was some conspiracy to out of the Trump campaign, because this George Papadopoulos had such power and control and was such a high-level person in the Trump campaign. And that's how that was their excuse to start surveilling him and Carter Page. Carter Page's story is different, same but different. It seems to me a huge setup, and I think we're finally figuring out in print that it is. In fact, the New York Times, who has been, the carrying water for the deep state on this, came out with an article yesterday called Code Name Crossfire Hurricane, The Secret Origins of the Trump Investigation. Let me just read the first part of this. Within hours of opening an investigation into the Trump campaign's ties to Russia in the summer of 2016, The FBI dispatched a pair of agents to London on a mission so secretive that all but a handful of officials were kept in the dark. Now, one of those agents was Peter Strzok, and we know now full well that he was very clear in his text to his lover, Lisa Page, about what they were doing. But the New York Times says, you know, claims this great cloak of secrecy. Well, it's pretty careless, but let's go on. Their assignment, which has not been previously reported, was to meet the Australian ambassador, who had evidence that one of Donald J. Trump's advisors knew in advance about Russian election meddling. And it goes, that's how it starts. And it goes, and they call this this whole operation Crossfire Hurricane. Now, what's this all about? That the New York Times, now it's a long article. I've got it in my hand. It's probably 15 pages. So why? And it goes into a lot of detail. What's this all about? Well, let me just use Kim Strassel to kind of explain it. Kim is a Wall Street Journal columnist, and she's been following this closely. And I just want to read, this is from her, this is just a few of her tweets about this. So a few important points on the New York Times Hurricane Crossfire piece. A story that, by the way, all of us following this knew had to be coming. This is DOJ FBI leakers attempt to get in front of the facts Nunez is forcing out. To make it not sound so bad, don't buy it. It's bad. Kimberly Strassel. Biggest takeaway, government sources admit that, indeed, the Obama DOJ and FBI spied on the Trump campaign. Spied. The New York Times kindly calls the spy an informant. The New York Times slips in confirmation far down in the story, makes it out like it isn't a big deal. It is a very big deal. The next one. In self-serving desire to get a sympathetic story about its actions, DOJ FBI leakers are willing to provide yet more details about that top secret source that they keep saying they want to protect, they need to protect, they can't give the name, they can't unredact the documents to members of Congress, to Devin Nunes, who heads the Intelligence Committee in the House. They're trying to protect him, but they leaked more information about him or her, making it all the more likely certain that he or she will be outed. DOJ, FBI, and its leakers have shredded what little credibility they have in claiming they cannot comply with a subpoena. They are willing to provide details to friendly media, but not Congress? Willing to risk the very source they claim they need to protect. There's more to it. I'm going to skip down. She says, as for whether to believe the line that the FBI operated soberly, carefully, judiciously in 2016, a main source for this judgment, this assessment, in other words, is Sally Yates, who is in the middle of it all. A bit like asking Putin to reassure us that Russia didn't meddle in our election. On that, if you are wondering who narrated the story, note paragraphs that assure everybody that hardly anybody in DOJ knew about the probe. Oh, and Comey also was given few details. Nobody knew nothing. This is Kim's words. Because when you require a whole story saying you behaved, it means you know you didn't. So that's Kim Strassel commenting on this article. But there are others commenting on it that are people that I trust. Here's one of them. Sundance, I've written, I don't know who this is actually, I've read to you many of his blog posts before. And he's a member of the intelligence community. That's all I know. So he says, U.S. intelligence officials who participated in the 2016 Russian interference narrative scheme are now attempting to justify their conspiratorial conduct with leaks to the New York Times and Washington Post. This cover-up endeavor has been their primary focus since Congress started demanding documentary evidence from the DOJ, FBI, State Department, and intelligence participants in the scheme. I'm not going to read all this, but he goes on to basically his... He makes the point that this is all an illusion. It's a circular firing squad. There was nothing there. They created it. They created the notion of collusion by setting up Papadopoulos and trying to set up Carter Page. They created the mole. They put somebody. They tried desperately. They tried to get Don Jr. They've tried on the Russian attorney that met with Donald Trump Jr. in Trump Tower. And this is early in their. They were pretty green. They had just been nominated, and suddenly this Russian attorney wants to talk to them and purportedly has stuff on Mrs. Clinton. I recall very keenly that she had not been allowed in the country for a long, long time because she was connected with some nefarious stuff in Russia, and suddenly Obama's officials allow her to come into the country, made it possible. I'm sure Don Jr. did not know this. And it was that too was a setup. It's just absolutely amazing. I think the thing that's the most amazing is that the wheels are coming off the bus. I've never seen this happen. I've never seen the left so trip over itself. Usually they're very successful. That's what's shocking to me about this. Okay, so just in regard to Robert Mueller. Oh, this is what Sundance says, that the Senate Intelligence Committee is the second most corrupt deep state assembly in Washington, D.C. That's the one led by Richard Burr, senator from North Carolina. Are you folks listening in North Carolina? I've told you what a bad character he is, and I'm begging you to do something about that. You know, from my home state, we gave you Barack Obama and Senator Dick Durbin, so I'm not boasting about, you know, any difference I made, but there is something you could do, and so please... please pay attention, all of you, everywhere, all 50 states. Let's get the bums out. Bum might be too nice a name. However, I digress. Okay, so this week, we found out that Robert Mueller indicted Russian organizations. Remember that big announcement he made about how he indicted all these Russians? Well, some of those didn't even exist during the time they were supposed to have been part of this collusion scheme. Also, we know that Robert Mueller has been looking into the taxes of Paul Manafort, tax avoidance schemes in 2006 and 2009, that's the basis upon which he has indicted Pat Manafort. He hasn't found anything. And I told you yesterday that we know that they used a Russian oligarch, whose name escapes me in this moment, to try to get out Manafort, to claim that he was part of the collusion. Which he said initially, this Russian oligarch said, that's ridiculous. And the way it was presented by Special Counsel Mueller was that, and here's this Russian who's claiming that Manafort is, you know, he has dealings with him. And it turns out that Bob Mueller has a long history with this Russian oligarch, that Bob Mueller worked when he was FBI director, got this Russian oligarch to spend $22 million of his own money to try to get out the FBI agent who was held in Iran for over 10 years, and finally, we think, is dead. Robert Mueller knew this Russian oligarch very well, but he never admitted that. And he's using him then to try to set up Manafort. It's just incomprehensible. All right, so a couple of other things that I want to, there's just tidbits in these long articles that I want to share with you. Okay. This is Sundance continuing. The leaky obfuscation goes on to say, in retrospect, the FBI and DOJ couldn't tell President Trump about their spying, wiretapping, and campaign surveillance because it would reinforce Trump's impressions that the FBI and DOJ were wiretapping, spying, and surveilling him. Seriously, that's their excuse. And then he goes on to say, the Obama intelligence community is blank. Can't say that word. They know it. And their justifications in the New York Times proves they knew it. Mark the date. The tide has turned. They, all of them, are now left attempting to control the severity of their exposure. So that's more about that. I want to also tell you that the House Freedom Caucus leadership, that means Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, and Ron DeSantis, have sent a letter to the president asking him to use his authority as president to instruct Attorney General Jeff Sessions to immediately produce all the documents related to House Republican investigations into prosecutorial and investigatorial decisions made by the DOJ and FBI. Now, people have been saying for some time that Mr. Trump, President Trump, could do this. He could release these, and people have talked about, well, why isn't he? And others are saying, well, because perhaps if he did that, people would... the thing would fall apart and people would say that he used his power to do that and he's tried to let it just all come out on its own, keeping himself out of it. I don't know. But they're asking him to release it. So we'll see. I mean, you know, after this New York Times article where they basically admit the web that they have woven, then maybe the president will actually listen to them and release the information. There's a lot more to say, but coming up next, an incredible interview that you won't want to miss with Patrice Bright, whose daughter Anna, sweet daughter Anna, took her own life after binge-watching the Netflix series 13 Reasons. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
we would not be outwitted by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his designs. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Early secular progressives were candid about their objectives. They rejected God and replaced him with humanism. They sought to perfect mankind, civilization, and the world through the institution that is sacrosanct to humanists, government. But not just any government would do. Charles Merriam, former advisor to FDR, opined in 1903 that in order for mankind and civilization to be elevated perfectly, it required a universal state, a world government. When discussions about open borders and universal health care are introduced, the issue is never the issue. It's always the globalist agenda.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios. This year's annual AFA retreat will be held at the beautiful Big Cedar Lodge near Branson, Missouri. I'm happy to be a part of it along with Abraham Hamilton III, Dr. Ray Pritchard, Ed Vitagliano, and our worship leader, Dennis Jernigan. And I hope to see you there too, along with other supporters of the American Family Association.
Join us for the AFA retreat October 8th through the 11th. For more information or to register, visit afafoundation.net.
Join American Family Radio for a live broadcast from our nation's capital at the Museum of the Bible. The museum was created to help people understand how the Bible has changed our world and impacted lives. I'm Bert Harper. Join me in the Exploring the Word team from Washington, D.C. We hope you'll be inspired to engage even more with this wonderful book. Join us next Tuesday through Friday at 3 Central. Thanks to the Museum of the Bible and India Partners for their support of American Family Radio.
Since the day the American Family Association began asking you to sign a petition urging the cancellation of 13 Reasons Why, Netflix has made some changes. They've added disclaimers before episodes and even a link to a suicide prevention hotline number. This is progress, but it's not enough. If you have signed the petition, thank you. If you haven't, please do. Netflix continues to ignore our request for a meeting to discuss the dangers of their show. And they're still going forward with the release of season 2 of this dangerous program. Too many teens have taken their own lives after watching 13 Reasons Why, a program which seems to suggest suicide as a viable option. Your signature and prayers could help convince Netflix to reconsider their social responsibility. Even one more teen suicide would be infinitely too many. Please read and sign the Netflix petition at afa.net.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Amidst acrimonious U.S.-China trade talks in Washington today, the House Intelligence Committee will begin a series of hearings examining evidence of Communist China's growing capacity to inflict mortal harm on this country and its interests, and Beijing's intention to do so. Testimony today will focus on the extraordinary military buildup that is inexorably transforming China into a superpower in every sense of the word, capable of projecting power worldwide. Future hearings are expected to examine how, even before Beijing has achieved such might, it is using a variety of non-military techniques, including influence operations, espionage, economic warfare, cyber attacks, overseas base construction, and space control to wage unrestricted warfare against us. Let's hope the record House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes develops will spur us to adopt appropriate policy and programmatic actions to counter this Chinese threat before it's too late. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The influence of media is so very powerful over a person.
American Family Association and the family of Anna Bright want to warn you about the Netflix program 13 Reasons Why.
I really feel in my heart, with all my soul, that show contributed to her passing.
After binge-watching season 1 of 13 Reasons Why, 14-year-old Anna Bright committed suicide in the same manner depicted on the show.
To portray suicide, first of all, as an option, is not a good thing. To portray it graphically, it leaves you vulnerable to the enemy's attack. which I think it definitely did for our daughter.
She took a permanent solution to a temporary situation.
Help protect our teens by signing the AFA petition urging Netflix to pull Season 1 and cancel the upcoming Season 2 of 13 Reasons Why. You can see Anna's story and sign the petition at AFA.net. That's AFA.net.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. 13 Reasons Why is a Netflix series. They've just completed their first year, but the second season is beginning tomorrow. It's beginning tomorrow. Tim Wildman, the president of the American Family Association, has written a letter to them asking for a meeting, warning them about what we know, about the results, what's happened, the tragedy that's come from this particular series. And it was ignored. And so that's why we're asking for your help. And let me just say, the first season of 13 Reasons Why is based on a young adult novel. The novel and the series revolve around the suicide of a teenager, Hannah Baker, who leaves behind cassette tapes that blame 13 different people as the reason she ended her life. The tapes are her means of revenge, her power over them after death. And in the first series, it's full of gratuitous profane language, excessive drug and alcohol use by high school students, homosexuality, empty friendships, bullying, violence, graphic sex, including two rape scenes, one which is likened to soft porn, and a full-on, raw, very real and gruesome three-minute depiction of a teenage girl committing suicide. And as a result of this, my next guest, I'm sure cannot even listen to that, as awful as it sounds to our ears. It's so very personal to Patrice Bright, because she and her husband came home to find their precious daughter, Anna, 14, having imitated the character on 13 Reasons Why and taking her own life. Patrice, first of all, thank you for having the courage to speak out today about this, and thank you for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Patrice, you've got a lot of courage, I have to tell you. This is not easy. And you know what? As a mother, I had a daughter who I lost, not in the same way, but let me just tell you that before we start talking here.
I'm so sorry.
So this is not easy. You know, I saw a picture of Anna. She looks so young. I mean, she was a young to me. She was very pretty, but a young 14-year-old. We're not talking about a girl that looked 21, were we?
No, ma'am. She was beautiful. She was very innocent looking.
Yeah, she was. I agree. I was stunned. Actually, I didn't even know she was 14 when I saw her picture. And now you say that she binged watched 13 Reasons Why. How did you know that?
We actually didn't find out about her watching the program and binge watching the program until after her death. We had the Netflix records pulled, but evidently she had watched it 2 weeks before her death. We had come home from the vacation of a lifetime. We had been to Disney World. I also have a son that's 12 years old now, and he was the one who actually found Anna.
Ugh.
He was taking a little fidget spinner to her that he had bought for her because he wanted her to start her collection of fidget spinners. And so he came to our bathroom door, and he knocked and tried to get her to answer the door. And when she didn't answer the door, he opened the bathroom door, and she had filled the tub like Hannah Baker in the series 13 Reasons Why with water. And she had actually gone under and shot herself, though, just behind her right ear.
You know, Anna, I mean, Patrice, little girls, I mean, I still remember this like it was yesterday. There are a lot of hormones that rage in the body of a 13, 12, 11-year-old girl, 15, go on if you want. Girls are notoriously emotional. So I know that I'm sure Patrice was, Anna was not any different than that. But did you see signs? Was she a depressed girl? Was she concerned about relationships? Do you have a boyfriend breakup? Anything like that?
She had a lot of talent, and she was an athlete. And like I said, you know, you saw she was so beautiful. She always had somebody that would pick on her because they were jealous of her, envious, you know. the things that she was able to do and just who she was as a person. But we thought we were dealing with those types of situations. And, you know, I had been to this school before to address certain issues, but not since she had been in middle school. She preferred to handle her own situations. And so we talked through every situation possible. We even talked about suicide. We were an extremely close family by all standards. And, you know, for her to have hidden that she watched this show was not typical of her character at all. This is the child that watched every episode of My Little Pony up until her teenage years and up through her teenage years. And so we think that when we got home from our vacation that she actually, while we were unpacking and getting our house situated, that she was kind of watching on her phone as she could, and that she engaged in family meals, and, you know, she was with us, but there was nothing out of the ordinary for a teenage girl. She would go in her room for hours at a time, but she taught herself to draw and do photography and sign language and music. She was always learning something, and you know, so it wasn't something that we noticed that she, you know, just exhibited profound symptoms of depression. But we believe that she was depressed, and her pediatrician has pretty much confirmed that for us. But, you know, as far as being an atypical teenager, there really wasn't that. I mean, there was a little withdrawing and a little negativity about herself, but we just thought and were told by any other parent that that was typical teenager behavior.
Yeah, which I would say so too. And, you know, I have to say, drop into this conversation that Anna is not the only person who has taken her life and imitated the suicide on 13 Reasons Why. A girl named Bella Herndon and Priscilla Chu, both 15-year-olds from California, did the same thing. A 23-year-old Peruvian man, Franco Alonso Lezo Medrano, has also done the same thing and left behind recordings that mimicked what happened in 13 Reasons Why. You contacted American Family Association, Patrice, which was pretty courageous, and I saw the video of you and your husband. It was, it's just really hard to watch and all of us, you know, it's just unfathomable to lose a child in this manner. But I want to ask you this. It was obvious from that tape and from your husband's comments there that you guys have deep faith. And I know personally that that deep faith doesn't spring up overnight, and certainly I think more often does not happen in the face of tragedy. If you have that kind of faith that manifests itself in the midst of that kind of tragedy, it was there already. So that's what I want to ask you about. You and your husband and your families, well, you can't claim faith for your family, but your personal faith in Christ, what was, just in a word, where did that come from, and how did that affect how you took this news?
My husband and I are both born-again Christians. I came to know the Lord in college out of a philosophy class, ironically. It's a great story. I'll have to tell you sometime.
All right. I'd love to hear it.
But just goes to show that Christ can reach you anywhere you are. My husband is a former minister. He had actually just resigned the ministry 3 weeks or so before Anna took her life, and we had been pastoring a small rural church that was about an hour away from us, and we love the people so much, and we still stay in close contact with them, but we just felt like we needed to be in a church in our community, and that our children needed to be a part of a youth group, and so that's why, essentially, he resigned the ministry there. Anna was also a born-again Christian. She received the Lord at the age of 8 years old. I had the privilege of leading her to the Lord myself, and my son as well. Shortly before that, he was 4 years old. But so my children have grown up in church, and they came to know the Lord at young ages. But I believe that their faith was genuine. My son, he's 12 years old now. He was actually able to lead his best friend to the Lord after the tragedy had happened.
Oh, man.
So in the fall of this past year, he's a remarkable young man, and I just know that God has incredible plans for him. But we can't live without the Lord. Like I said, he has carried us every step of the way since this has happened. And he tells us he would in his word, Isaiah 46:4, that he would carry us until we're old and gray. And so we just trust him and we trust his word.
Yes, ma'am. I ditto that. And I will let me get practical for a second, because we're asking those of you listening to do something. We have a petition, a letter that we'd like for you to sign to beg and pressure in the most respectful but forceful way Netflix to stop this second season that begins tomorrow. You can go to afa.net, that's afa.net, and sign your name. You can see, if you go to afa.net, you'll see lots more about this story. You'll see the beautiful Anna and her mom and dad, and you'll hear more of the details that we are not able to get into. Patrice, I would just say this, you know, this was my experience in the sense that I had served the Lord for a long time before a lot of things happened in my life. And there comes a time when you just, it's hurt so much that sometimes you can't feel necessarily, this is my experience, it may not be sure. yours, you can't necessarily feel God's presence. But because I had served him for so long and I had seen his hand in such a mighty way, there are times when we serve him with our mind. You know, we love him with our mind, our heart, and we love him with our whole being. And there's sometimes you have to depend on your mind to remember what God has done and trust him, as you just expressed. Trust him, even though you don't know what that means. But it sounds like you're seeing some tangible fruit through your son. God does not waste tragedy, as you well know. What are you hoping to accomplish? Today you're going to be at AFA doing lots of interviews. What would be the best outcome here under these tragic circumstances from your perspective?
Well, the best outcome would obviously be for the show to be pulled. We realize and understand that we're not responsible for that outcome, though. We're only responsible for being obedient in this situation, and we want to provide the most awareness to parents who are willing to listen and want to help their children through these difficult times that they experience, and not to allow the devil to influence them through watching things like this, and, you know, just to avoid watching something like this, to get that image in their head. And we just want them to choose more life-giving type shows and things that give hope. And this show is not one of those things that provides any type of hope.
Would you do anything differently about what your kids watch? Is there something you would say to parents listening? We only have less than a minute left, Patrice.
Well, I would obviously, you know, be much more involved. I mean, I was involved, and we looked at everything that they had looked at. Unfortunately, she had hidden this one from us by clicking on several different things so that we weren't able to see it. But maybe even limiting more the use of the devices and whatnot these type images into their minds.
Maybe be willing to risk your kids getting a little angry with you in order to step in, as it's not worth it. Them liking you is not worth the loss of their lives.
Absolutely.
Anna Bright was lost because she watched 13 Reasons Why. What a tragedy. Go to afa.net and sign the petition. Patrice, God bless you and your husband and your sweet son. I can't wait to see what beautiful things God's going to bring from this. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.